shark.
A what?
Tiger shark.
Gonna kill all these people, we think so. But the great white is coming, oh no, oh no.
Hello and welcome to Let's Jaws for a Minute, the podcast which took a deep dive into Steven Spielberg's 1975 masterpiece and is now setting sail into uncharted waters to discover the world beyond Jaws. I am one of your co-hosts, Sarah Buttery. So our regular listeners will know that we are on a bit of an unplanned extended hiatus at the moment. So it's just me hosting this episode, no MJ, but hopefully we'll be back very, very soon during our usual episodes. But I do have a very special guest joining me, which is very, very exciting. He is an actor, writer, director, producer, best-selling author. You may be familiar with his book, The Disaster Artist, which was turned into an Oscar-nominated and Golden Globe-winning movie in 2017. You may also know him from 2003's iconic cult hit, The Room. Welcome to the show, Greg Sestero. Hi, Greg.
Hey, it's great to be reunited.
Yeah, it is, definitely. So for a bit of context for our listeners, I've interviewed Greg twice before, I think. And we were just talking off mic that it's been about 4 years since we caught up. So a lot has happened in that time and a lot of cool projects that you've been working on, Greg. So very excited to get into to talking about that. But as we are a Jaws podcast for the most part, the first question that we have to throw at you, as we throw at all of our guests, is what are your thoughts on Jaws, aka the greatest film ever made?
Jaws is just so masterful because it does any movie about a shark, anytime people come in, they immediately think about the shark. But Jaws had a way of making you intrigued and invested in the characters. Mm-hmm. So the shark almost became part of the film in a way, but you were really invested in the story. And I think that's one of the hardest things to do. It gave you elements of what you were looking for in the beginning, but then really drew you in a way that became a movie. And anytime mm-hmm. you're making a genre film like that, that's really the hope, is that people love the genre, but they also love your characters.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always say to people that like Jaws is not a shark movie. Like, it is and it isn't. It's so much more than that, as we have proven on this podcast, because we spent more than 100 hours talking about it and breaking it down minute by minute. So there's plenty more to talk about. I don't think you could do that with a film that was just about a shark. So yeah, there's so much more, so many layers in it as well. And like, I don't know where you stand on the, is it a horror film? Isn't it a horror film? Because I think it is. And I don't think there's really any debate about that. But yeah, interesting. I know you're a big horror guy. So like, where you fall on that?
Well, it's got the score, Rich. The score is up there with like Psycho or any scary. Mm-hmm.
Halloween as well.
Yeah. So it definitely, it's everything really. I think that's what's so great about it.
Yeah, I mean, we make quite the compelling argument on this podcast that it is in fact a slasher film, because I mean, that opening shot of Jaws is basically the same in Halloween, the like first person perspective of the killer. So yeah, whether it's a slasher movie in the way most people think about slasher movies, I don't know, but it's definitely a horror. I don't think there's any debate on that one. Yeah, so I don't think my intro quite did justice to your career, but I think most of our listeners will probably know you from The Room, and we'll certainly get to talking about that because it's a big anniversary this year. But fill us in on what you have been up to since then, I guess. I mean, that's a lot of years to cover, but the highlights anyway.
I mean, I think, The Room became a cult movie, which I think surprised a lot of people. It's, you know, anytime something becomes a cult film that screens for years, it's pretty surprising. But once the movie started screening internationally, I got the idea to write a memoir about my experience making the movie called The Disaster Artist, which came out and became a film. And I really loved that whole experience of watching the book be adapted by a lot of actors I looked up to. And I got a chance to visit the set quite a bit and realized these guys are having so much fun making this film. And they're working hard and they're producing something they're proud of. And that's sort of what I decided I wanted to do next. It's like, hey, why wait? Just go out and start making films. So shortly thereafter, I made a movie called Best Friends, which we just kind of went out and made. You know, it was like, hey, I love Breaking Bad. I love A Simple Plan. Why don't we just go out and make a movie that we can be proud of? So we went out and made Best Friends, and you were one of the very first people that spoke up that liked Best Friends and at a very early screening. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody had ever seen it before. And so you were one of the first supporters of that, which was really awesome, which I really appreciated because you're scared when you put, it's like putting anything out there really personal. So mm-hmm. Best Friends was sort of the first chance to make something. And we made Best Friends Volume 1, Volume 2. And then from that point on, I said, hey, I love horror and I really want to get out and make a horror film. So after Best Friends, I went out and wrote, directed, produced, starred in a movie called Miracle Valley, which is an homage to 70s horror, like The Hills Have Eyes and Texas Chainsaw mm-hmm. Massacre. We made that movie and then the pandemic happened. So we finally got a chance to release it at Fright Fest UK and do a few other events, and it's coming out more wide this year. But again, a really great experience working in genre, working in horror. And now what I'm working on is a UFO abduction movie called Forbidden Sky that I've been developing in the past couple of years that we hope to make in Roswell, New Mexico. It's a crazy story. We want to use practical effects. And again, sort of the homage for this film is Fire in the Sky, Galaxy Quest, The Thing, just sort of those movies we can watch over and over. That's sort of what I love to make is movies that are really fun with a crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting, like, because The Room is, I always see it now as like an experience. Like when you go to a screening, you're not going to watch the film. Like I have struggled when I've taken friends to see it and it's the first time they've seen it, because they're like half trying to watch the film, but also just getting like caught up in the experience. But like, do you find that that has translated to your other films? So obviously Best Friends, you wrote and starred in, produced, and then Miracle Valley directed and starred in as well. But yeah.
The audience is definitely looking for that. When they come to a movie, mm-hmm. they have that energy. And so, you know, you got to keep that in mind when you're telling a story, that that there are media instances to find ridiculousness and humor in some. And so, you know, keep that in mind. And I think the audience will be surprised and will follow you if you take them in a different direction that's authentic. So, you know, it's just about guiding them. And at the end of the day, you want to make sure they have a good time when they come see your film.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, do you think there's a difference in the way that your films are received? So from fans of The Room on the one hand, and then people who are coming in fresh on the other hand, do you think that they have different experiences with your films?
I think some people, yeah, they come with different energies. But at the end of the day, I think the fans are really smart. They can tell if you're throwing your heart into something. And I think it's pretty clear when you're phoning it in. And so I always make sure to, you know, being such a film lover who's studied movies, live with movies, I always want to give something unique to whatever I make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when we spoke before, I remember sort of, I think I asked you then about if you were ever going to move into directing, and you were like, oh, maybe, don't know. Like your focus then at the time was writing. But what made you want to finally take that leap into directing?
I think with Miracle Valley, I was living, it was a really cool experience because I was living on this ranch in the desert in Arizona. And I was just there and I had the entire space to create a story. Mm-hmm. And so what was really cool is I got to write this script based in this environment that I knew I had access to. So as I was writing it, I was sort of directing it as the story was unfolding. So I had already seen the movie in my mind, which made it really easy if I was going to try directing to direct Miracle Valley, because we were going to shoot it all handheld. And it was just a really engaging way to tell a story. So writing it in the environment that we were making it in really made it easy to also direct it as well.
Mm. So did you plan to direct it from the start, or that's just kind of how it came about when you started exploring the story and the environment?
Yeah, I knew I wanted to make a horror film. So I, you know, when I moved down there, that was my only goal. And then as it evolved into writing, it sort of became a process from like, you know what, if I'm going to do the whole writing, directing, starring, this is the movie to do it. So it took stages before I realized I was going to be in it. Initially, I wasn't even going to be in it. But as it developed, I was like, yeah, this is a fun challenge.
Mm-hmm. I know you're big into your movies. I think that comes across in all of your projects and just listening to you talk as well. But and you're someone who does his homework when it comes to the projects that you're part of. So what were your main sources of inspiration, I guess, for Miracle Valley to start? And then we'll talk about your next project?
No, they were, it was The Hills Have Eyes, Don't Breathe, Hereditary, mm-hmm. Breakdown. I took like 20 movies that I loved, most of them horror.
Yeah.
Because I was living on a ranch by myself. I had nothing else to do. So I would sit there and watch like five to 10 minutes of some of my favorite movies every day for inspiration. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what do I like about this scene? What do I keep coming back to? And I wanted to make sure scenes were catchy and fun and the story was surprising, because one of my favorite movies is Psycho. Mm-hmm. And I love how it just surprises the audience and puts them in a way where they're invested and they don't know what's coming next.
Yeah, Psycho is such a great movie. I mean, we've spoken about it on this podcast before that, like, if we ever did another minute by minute breakdown, which is a lot of work and it's a lot of time to invest in a project, that we would probably, I think me and MJ both agreed, we would probably do it on Psycho, because that is a hell of a film to dive into, like, the minute details of it. I think that would be fascinating. I mean, if you, as we were, well, are or were a minute by minute breakdown podcast, if you had to break down any film minute by minute on a theoretical podcast, what would it be?
I'd probably do Back to the Future. I love the alternate timelines, and I just love the way the story wraps around. And I love movies that you can live in, and you're like in a certain scene and it does something to your reality, you know?
Yeah.
That's always something that's really interesting.
That would be a super fun one, actually. I mean, we haven't recorded the episode yet because we're on a hiatus, but because Spielberg produced that one and we just did a whole Spielberg season. That's the next one that we need to cover. But we did an episode on Poltergeist as well. And I famously not a big horror fan, but as we established on that episode, kind of think I am a bit of a horror fan, just without realizing it, because I looked at my like favorite films and it's like Jaws, The Shining, The Thing. And I was like, oh, okay. I think maybe actually I do like this genre more than I thought. I'm just easily spooked. So
yeah,
like to pretend that definitely. I don't like it that much. But Poltergeist is a great film as well in terms of like practical effects and stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. Practical effects to me are something, they're just, it's really charming. And it's just, it gives you more of the, like the love film lover when you have those practical effects. I don't know if you knew in Return of the Jedi, where it has that massive, that huge, massive scene where the Emperor's coming. That's all like a mural. That's a mural drawing. That to me, like that just blew my mind how cool that was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just the more we have of that, the better, I think.
I think, yeah, practical effects don't seem to age as much as CGI as well. I mean, obviously we defend how the shark looks in Jaws, but you can say it looks fake. There's moments, sure. But also it was the 70s for a start, very unreliable, famously, but it still looks great. And the effect it creates is the most important thing. But you mentioned the Absolutely. Thing earlier, like the effects in that have not aged a day. It still looks incredible.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, and that those are the movies we keep coming back to.
Yeah, definitely. And like, yeah, you go back to some like early CGI films and I guess the way the effects have aged is kind of charming, but also it tends to age a film quicker rather than like the practical effects. Absolutely. For sure. So Forbidden Sky, you mentioned, is your next project. So what can you tell us about that?
So Forbidden Sky is, I've been researching UFOs for the past few years. I took a UFO night tour in Sedona, Arizona, which is one of the places that apparently is like the vortex there has one of the most, one of the most random like connection to UFOs, where there's the most activity there of any place. And so I took a tour. It was really insane. Anyway, some of my, again, I love The Thing. I love Galaxy Quest. I love Fire in the Sky. I love all those movies. So I just became really intrigued taking this tour. And I got this idea of this movie idea where you have this guy who was in this really bad sci-fi show, young actor. And, you know, he really took it seriously. It gets canceled and he doesn't quite get it. But so he keeps this persona alive of this character he played. It never really lets go of it. And it alienates him from his family. And his, you know, so he's now living in a trailer outside like Roswell, New Mexico. He's investigating that crash that happened 75 years ago. And he's just does this conspiracy radio show every night. And he's like really obsessed with reaching out. And it's a joke. Like nobody calls. Like he's out there sort of living in his own world. And then late one night, he gets a call. His sound waves reach an alien race and they want to come to Earth, but they only want to speak to him. So all of a sudden now he's this important figure. He's this mediator between Earth and this alien race. So now all of a sudden he's thrust into this like very important role that you could have never imagined being in. So it kind of takes him on this really crazy adventure. Got a little bit of like Indiana Jones and kind of the surrealness of like getting what you always wanted, but not sure if you're like right for it or ready for it. And so you have to find out. So it's kind of a crazy story I've been developing for a couple of years. So, but the radio show is called Forbidden Sky.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. It sounds, I mean, sci-fi is my genre, so I'm personally very excited for it. Is there a horror edge to it as well? Because I mean, definitely, sci-fi horror is definitely also very much my bag.
Sci-fi horror, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Me too. So I was getting, I don't know if this is just the poster or if it is the official poster, the one that's on IMDb with like the kind of guy being like beamed up into the sky. I was getting Nope vibes from that. I don't know if that was an influence at all.
No, I did because I'd written all this before Nope. Yeah.
Happy coincidence. Yeah, because there's a one of the posters for Nope, I think, is like the horse being like pulled up into the sky or something. But as soon as I saw the poster, I was like, oh, it looks kind of like Nope. But I mean, that is, did you see Nope?
I saw half of it. It was a really late night. I'd been up for a while. I was in Vegas, and then I fell asleep. I literally woke up when the credits rolled.
Okay.
So I got to get back and check it out.
It's real good. In terms of like not being the kind of film you expect it to be, I don't know if it's just because it's very different to Jordan Peele's other films, which are more like out and out horror, whereas this is like, it's more mysterious. It's not, I don't think it's scary at all, but I mean, we call it Sky Jaws because it's also really, really similar to Jaws in a lot of ways in terms of like the fear of like the unknown and that sort of thing. But I think that's a super interesting concept. And I guess that will like tie into Forbidden Sky as well, right? This like idea of the unknown that like, we still don't know so much about sex and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Do you know, well, what stage are you at with Forbidden Sky? Is it, are you shooting?
So we're going to make it later this year. And it's going to be, for the first time ever, we're going to work with Kickstarter and we're going to involve fans. Fans are going to be able to have input. You know, we're opening like a few cameo roles. So we're going to try to, with it being the 20th anniversary of The Room, we're going to try to get that, you know, spirit into it.
Yeah, definitely. And we said this off mic as well, but we'll share that Kickstarter and everything if people want to take a look and want to get involved and want to support as well. I think it's, yeah, I mean, obviously I've supported you guys for quite a while, but yeah, it's nice to sort of see that you're still making the projects that you're really passionate about. I think that the direction that things have gone for you is, I just find it so fascinating that to come from what the room was and for all its, you know, greatness and weirdness and everything, and to have gone in the direction that you've gone in terms of like still making movies and still loving making movies as well, I think it's just really great.
I forget, did you see Miracle Valley?
I haven't seen it yet.
I'll get you a screener if you want to see it.
Yes, because I couldn't travel anywhere last year due to being the world's clumsiest person.
Yeah, definitely. I remember that. Yeah, no, I remember that.
But if there's, you said there's going to be some showings of it this year as well? Or?
I think so, towards October, I think, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm definitely, I'm keen to see it. I was watching the trailer for it and I was like, oh, we haven't seen this yet. I basically didn't leave the house last year, so.
Yeah,
it's my, it's my own self-imposed lockdown last year for being a stupid, clumsy person. But you mentioned The Room, 20th anniversary this year. Can you believe it?
It's the past 10 to 13 years have flown by for sure. Mm-hmm. Once it caught fire and starts screening around the world, it definitely has been writing the book. It's just been like a Zoom. And I'm just really thankful to the people that have supported this movie like around the world and continue to talk about it. And and it's brought people together. I mean, I've been to weddings now where people got married because of the room. That's how much it means to them. So that's pretty, it's pretty cool.
And your relationship with the film, like, how has that sort of changed over time and to where you are now?
I think it's initially I was really fascinated by what people would think. I didn't think there was any chance of success, you know, in a lot of ways, because you make good films, you make crazy films, like really hard to get people to sit down and watch something and connect to it. So I think once it started to catch on, I was really fascinated. And then after 20 years now, I just sort of appreciate what it's brought to people. It's not a movie I'm going to watch or show people, but I think if you sit in at a crowded screening and people are engaging with the film, it's a totally different experience that is really a must for anybody who loves going to the movies. It's just one of those things you have to see and experience. And it's just very entertaining. And it's just great that people have gotten so much out of it.
And yeah, any plans this year for the 20th anniversary? I know you're always a busy guy at screenings and traveling all over the place, but any special plans for the 20th anniversary?
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be a few things that we're working on that'll be cool. I think it's June 27th. So gotta come up with something fun.
Whoa, yeah, okay. Yeah. The actual release date is still to come, isn't it? So I mean, I will celebrate it by watching The Room probably by myself at home with my dog. So that's it'll be her first time watching it. So that'll be fun. But another film that I feel like we have to talk about, even if you're not necessarily a part of, just based on the kind of podcast we are, is a certain little shark.
Yeah.
Called Big Shark.
Yeah. I think the last time I talked to you, we just shot a concept trailer.
Yeah.
For Big Shark. And that got released. Then the pandemic happened. And I know Tommy's been out making the film. So I think he's going to start showing it. I have not seen it, but I'm sure it'll be quite magical. Of, you know, if he's behind the camera, I'm sure it'll be something fun.
I cannot tell you how many people sent me that trailer when it dropped. It felt like everyone I know or have ever spoken to or interacted with in any way was just like, life. Yeah, I was like, did you know? And I was like, yeah, of course I know. This is it's the most on-brand thing for me ever. If it's a shark film with a connection to The Room. Like people are still, I mean, and all the things that I read about it, people are still saying that you're in it. So you're kind of like getting it out there that you're not actually it.
Maybe you gotta look. Maybe I'm hiding behind a shark or, you know, my face might pop up or something.
You are the shark. That's the plot twist of this.
That's true.
Oh boy. Yeah. When is that coming out? Soon, right?
I think there's going to be screenings starting next month. I think sporadically around the country.
Okay. I'll probably have to wait a bit longer, but it's okay. Part of the woes of living in the
UK. Just watch Jaws to warm up for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like they will be comparable. So that will be our next minute by minute breakdown.
For sure.
Film that we do. It's Big Shark. And then there was a couple of other things that you've been involved with that I just wanted to chat about. So you had a very small little cameo in The Haunting of Bly Manor. How did that come about?
Yeah, that was I was amazing to work with Mike Flanagan on that. He's done The Haunting of Hill House, and so I met his wife Kate Siegel at a horror convention, and she told me that Mike really loved the Disaster Artist book, and you know, wanted to work together, and it was just such an honor to get to be part of that scene. It was very last minute because they already started production. So I got to play the fiance, which I thought was on brand. And I got to film a couple episodes, and it was just really cool to be a part of such a great show and surprise fans when I popped up with no warning. I thought that was really fun. But Mike Flanagan's great. All this stuff is really, really strong, really fascinating storyteller. So it was really a great experience.
I had a like live reaction to your appearance in it. So my husband loved Haunting of Hill House, and then obviously he was excited when Haunting of Bly Manor was available to watch. And I was like, there's a really great cameo in it. Just tell me when you've seen it. And he was like, okay. And he was watching it in the other room, and I'm in like the next room. And then I just like 10 minutes in, I just hear him being like, is that fucking Alexa Steph? Like yelling from the other room.
That's great.
He was very surprised. It was really sweet.
That's awesome. That's the whole reason we do this, is to get that reaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And it's apart from all the things that we've covered already, where do you think things are going next? I know you were talking about maybe writing another book, or is that still sort of like on the cards? Or
yeah, I think UFOs, let's see if I can survive that. and then definitely want to, you know, keep making movies and see what the next episode is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Very, very excited, of course, to find out what you're getting up to next. So you have to come and chat to us again.
Maybe even start a podcast.
Look, I recommend it. It's a lot of fun. Takes up a lot of my time, but it's great.
Sure.
Have you been on many podcast appearances? I know you did one with Macaulay Culkin, didn't you?
Yeah, I've done a few. It's a great way to connect with people. And I love the idea of people are traveling or driving to work and they get a chance to working out at the gym, get a chance to connect with you. I think it's cool.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I just find it weird that, I mean, when we started doing this podcast, I was like, is anyone going to want to listen to this? Like, I just find it weird that people actually listen to it and enjoy it. I don't know if you ever get that with things that you put out, like it just blows your mind that people like enjoy these things that you put out into the world.
It's sort of the beauty of just, yeah, putting something out there and see where people connect with it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's always a little bit like, scary as well, putting stuff out there, sure. Isn't it? It's like bearing your soul in certain ways.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, how is this going to be received? Are people going to like it? And yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of that high of, you know, what's exciting about it.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And you can always learn. You can always learn from each project. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, is there anything that, I guess, from the projects that you've worked on so far that you... lessons learned from them or things that you would do differently on your next film or future films? Or
definitely, yeah, having a vision for things, having the right team around you, taking time with it, enjoying the process. I think a lot of times we find ourselves rushing to the end, rushing for results. Mm. But really the process is pretty great of just being in the moment and going through each stage of production and making things. So I think taking your time also I think is important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I have to ask just for my own personal curiosity, is Rick gonna be in Forbidden Sky?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, I'm so pumped.
He's amazing in Miracle Valley, so.
Oh, which, yeah.
Yeah.
When I think you told me he was gonna be in that. So for context for our listeners, in Best Friends is a guy called Rick Edwards who plays Uncle Rick, and he's like this Clint Eastwood dude who steals every single scene that he's in and is just fantastic in it. So personally, if I just see his name attached to one of your projects now, I'm super pumped for it. So
definitely. Yeah. No, Rick's a real asset to any film.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait. I can't wait to see for Miracle Valley and Forbidden Sky as well, of course, is the next one. Do you have any, obviously you need to actually make the film, but any idea when it'll be out, or is it just...
It's probably going to be later next year, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the hope. Sometime later next year.
Yeah. These things, they take as long as they take, don't they? Sometimes life happens.
We got to get it cleared with the aliens too, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
We don't want them to be mad.
Definitely not. They're the last people that you want to piss off when you're making a film, right? Oh, well, thank you so much. But I really appreciate you coming and taking time out of your day. So if you want to let people know where they can find you, where they can watch various things as well that you're in, have made, whatever you want to promote.
Yeah, I'm on social media at Greg Sestero. And Miracle Valley is available on Tubi, which I'm not sure if it's available in the UK, but it's going to be on Blu-ray and all that good stuff. So it'll be out in, I think, the UK sometime this year.
Okay, awesome. And yeah, as I said, we'll share the link to the Kickstarter and everything when it's live, so people can check that out.
Awesome.
So for us, you can get in touch with us, Let's Jaws for a Minute, on Twitter and Instagram. We're at Jaws for a Minute. You can email us, jawsforaminute@gmail.com, and follow us individually. I'm at Sarah Buttery. And MJ is at MJSmith891. You can find us wherever you find your podcasts. And I promise we will be back with some episodes soon. But until then, this has been a great little stopgap while we figure our situation out. And thanks again. Thanks so much, Greg, for coming on.
Awesome. Thank you.